Disasters are a reality of life in the Pacific, but so is the strength and resilience of its people. Pacific Prepared shares first-hand stories from communities on the ground, drawing on tradition, culture, and collective wisdom to stay safe and support one another in times of disaster. Pacific Prepared explores how communities are adapting and protecting what matters most. Search up ABC Pacific Prepared to listen online or find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an ABC podcast.
ABC Radio Australia. This is Fresh Off the Field. The sporting spirit of the Pacific.
Malolele and welcome to Fresh Off the Field, the sporting pulse of the Pacific. My name is Sam Wykes and this show is all about keeping you across all things Pacifica sport. So let's not waste any time and get to what's coming up on our beautiful show today. You're going to meet PNG Touch Football veteran and coach Eugene Ecker.
My message is just to have a good attitude, to be disciplined, listen to your parents, always respect yourself, respect the people around you, just put God first in anything, everything and anything you do. And yeah, just take one day at a time, one game at a time, one training session at a time.
Great advice from Eugene, and we'll hear more from him later on in the show. You also meet newly appointed Cook Islands chef de mission, Michelle Paiti.
Definitely our preparation will be key, just in creating a team bond and a positive family environment that everybody's feel safe and supported in, and create some understanding and awareness for our athletes just to help them outside of their actual events, because it will be overwhelming for them.
We'll also talk through the massive news in the worlds of soccer, netball, flag football, a bit of rugby league and rugby union chat, swimming and much, much more. And to do all that, I need some help. Caught in some more big guns, one from the Cook Islands, one from PNG, but we'll start with the champion from PNG, Jamie Huddle. Hello, Geta. It is great to have you back.
Good morning, True. Hello, all Geta. It feels great to finally report back home. The last time I came on board, I was reporting from Scotland.
Yeah, you have been jet-setting around the globe. It's good to see, but it is Tongan Language Week. Your Fijian accent is down pat. I know you've got that down, but what have you got for me for Tongan Language Week?
The two very popular common Tongan language, which is Malolele and yes. Malo Apito.
Malolele, Malo Apito. I love it. There we go. Hello, and thank you very much. Good to know that your vocab goes all across the Pacific, so great work. But let's get over to our Cook Islander, our champion Cook Islander over there. Look, she's giggling in the background. Here she is, Harriet Tuara. It is great to have you back on as well.
Malo elele, Sam Wakis.
Sam Wakis.
Great to be back on the show.
You wouldn't believe it.
Sam Wakis.
Do you know when I was playing in some of the Tongan tournaments when I was younger, their coaches thought that's how they say that. That's how they would say my last name, Samuela Wakis. Wakis or Wakis, Wakis. But that's their own version. So I'm glad you've picked up on it. But outside of that famous Tongan word, Wakis, what else have you got for me?
I'm gonna try my one on this one. Fefehake.
Fefehake. Saipe. Yes. How are you? Usually go malolele, fefehake. Yep, saipe. Now, love it, ladies. Thank you for joining in on Tongan Language Week. I've got a long way to go, actually. I need to learn a lot more. So hopefully my wife can teach me along the way. But anyway, that's enough about us. Let's get to the show.
ABC Radio Australia. You're listening to Fresh Off the Field. Uniting the Pacific through the universal language of sports.
Like we do every week, we start with the big issues, the big stories, and we call it the big bowl because the big bowl is where we come together, we take a seat on the mat and chat the biggest sports stories across the Pacific. So sit back and fill your cup up as myself, Jamie, and Harriet run through the must-know news in the region. Jamie, let's start with you.
Well, big news for rugby union. During the weekend here in PNG, obviously former Australian Wallabies Israel Folau, as well as Will Genia, made a special appearance in Port Moresby last Friday evening, igniting the Capital Rugby Union competition. Now, Fola, who's a dual code athlete, has 73 test caps, as well as Genia, who has 110 test caps, featured in the defending premier team, CRU defending team, Valley Hunters, who took on University Piggies and defeated them 33-7 at the Sir John Guy Stadium. Now, upon his arrival last week, a lot of people speculated that he was here to have a talk with the PNG Chiefs, obviously for NRL, but I can confirm that this has nothing to do with PNG Chiefs, as mentioned by the Valley Hunter socials, that it was all about the grassroots rugby here in Papua New Guinea. So Fola was here to help create an impact, obviously through his connections with Will Genia and Will's older brother, Frank, who's also a PNG, former PNG Puk Puks veteran, has been doing really great job spearheading the Valley Hunters team, especially the Premier Division, as the head coach. Now, this is not the first time a former Wallabies made an appearance in the CRU competition, because last year, Valley Hunters were also graced with the presence of two former Wallabies in the likes of Harry Spate as well as Matt Gito for the VH Gala event. That was prior to that event. They had a matchup with between Valley Hunters and Anova. So the Genia brothers are really doing a great job for the local competition, especially here in Papua New Guinea. Through this opportunity, a lot of our local talents now have the privilege to say that they've rubbed shoulders with international household names like Fola, Spade, Gitao, as well as Genia.
Yeah, loved it. I've seen Israel Folau on the left-hand side, and he broke through, passed the ball back onto Willie Genia to score under the post. So the old 1-2 combination hasn't skipped a beat. So that was cool to see that. And I did also see Will Genia, head-high tackle, yellow card, the crowd going off as well, making sure that the ref knew to pull out a card and get him off the field. I messaged Willie Genia, and it's like, oh, mate, there was nothing in that, was there? I've seen some of those rugby league games over in PNG. Man, they wouldn't even flinch if that was if that happened in those games. He goes, exactly, bro. But anyway, I've got to play by the rules, so my fault. He got yellow carded, and hopefully his discipline picks up in other games. But it was also nice to see as well at the end of the game, Israel Folau linking arms with the opposition, with the Valley Hunter players around, sharing a prayer, and he obviously shared some words of advice as well. That was pretty cool to see as well.
Yeah, it was indeed. Like I said, it was about the experience between both teams, so all the players on both sides had the opportunity to meet him in person, for him to give some really good words of encouragement, as a lot of them, with the standard of the competition going, a lot of the players are now, not just from Valley Hunters, but from the other clubs, are finally getting that exposure to play, do well in the CRU competition, to go and play overseas in competitions in Australia as well as New Zealand, but mainly Australia. So, yeah, to have Israel Folau come over and give some words of encouragement to young talents here in Papua New Guinea, it's really worth it. So, yeah, really great stuff for the growth of rugby here in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And I think, I believe, and we'll have more of this story as well, the end of this month, Will Genia is going to play for this invitational side. I think it's the Asia Pacific Dragons. They're going over to Sri Lanka to play against English Premiership side Northampton Saints. But what the cool thing is around this story is one of the players from the Valley Hunters is going to go with Will Genia to play in this game for the Asia Pacific Dragons. So I've got some more news on that one. That'll be cool to see. And Will Genia's doing some amazing things to be able to, and his brother and his sister, to be able to provide more opportunities and pathways out of Papua New Guinea in rugby. So that's cool to see, and we'll have you more on that in the coming weeks. But Harriet, let's get over to you now. We're going to shift from a land sport into the water, a bit of swimming for us.
Yes, a bit of swimming. So we're heading over to Irvine, California, where they held the Pan Pacific tournament there. And it was New Zealand's Erica Fairweather, actually, who's continuing to cement her place among the world's elite distance swimmers, with the Ngāi Tahu athlete helping put Aotearoa and the wider Pacific firmly in the spotlight on that international stage. Fairweather's Māori heritage adds as an important dimension to her rise, but it was her performances in the pool that are really doing the biggest talking at the moment. So currently, she's a world champion in the 400-meter freestyle and one of New Zealand's leading hopes in the longer freestyle events. And while Australia's Lani Pallister ultimately stole the headlines with the stunning victory in the 800-meter freestyle, ending America's Katie Ledecky's long unbeaten run in the event, it was Fairweather who remained an important part of this new generation of Pacific-connected swimmers, challenging the established order. Pallister led the 800 from start to finish, stopping the clock at 8 minutes, 6 seconds, and with Ledecky more than a second behind her. Yeah, very, very exciting world of swim at the moment. It's a changing of the guard moment, especially in women's distance swimming and for the Pacific. Athletes like Fairweather and Pallister are really showing that there's plenty of talent capable of taking on the world's very best as they surely look towards LA 2028.
Beautiful. Plenty on the horizon there for our swimmers. And I know there's some really good Cook Island swimmers out there and Samoan swimmers as well. So hopefully they can make a rise and make a charge for the LA Olympics or even Brisbane further down the track. But we are going to shift over now to flag football. American Samoa's flag football have done some amazing things. Did we see this online? Did any of you see this online the other day?
I haven't actually tuned in yet.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to let you know this was Jamie's story, but I stole it off her because I said she was going to bring this one in and I had to pull rank and just say, sorry, Jamie, this is my story because I needed a big bowl one. But anyway, thank you, Jamie. I appreciate you being a good sport here. Look, American Samoa, they pulled off a massive upset by defeating Team USA 38 points to 32 at the IFAF Flag Football World Championships in Germany. And what's historic about this as well with American Samoa, like not just beating Team USA, this is a historic win because it ended the United States men's team's 14-year unbeaten streak in the international competition. So that is a huge effort from American
Samoa
to be able to win 38 points to 32. When you think about the star player there, I think it was Taulia Tagovailoa. He's the younger brother of NFL quarterback Tua. Like, he led the team. He completed 29 out of 36 passes, 213 yards. But I think, yeah, just to be able to see, you know, someone like him, Taulia, take charge, be the quarterback, be the main man, and lead his team into such a historic win, I thought it deserved to be part of the big bowl. And being part of this, I guess, the Flag Football World Championships, American Samoa, they finished in fifth place overall, a historic run that included four wins and two losses. This means that this was a qualifier for the Olympics for LA because it is an Olympic sport, but they just missed out on placing at the LA Games, but they still have a further chances to qualify next year. So it's not the end of the road for American Samoa, but nonetheless, they're going to be prepped well. And I think that's a massive effort when you consider, you know, I think they were the lowest ranked team in the competition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they beat the likes of Australia. They beat the likes of America, Team USA. So I think a huge congratulations deserves to go to American Samoa in flag football. Jamie, did you have anything to add on that? Because I know it was your story first, so I did still, but did you have anything else to add on that?
Yeah, look, it's really impressive to see that a Pacific team, and American Samoa was the only Pacific team to compete in this world championship or flag football championship in Germany. And, you know, they're setting the standard with the rise of flag footy here in the Pacific. we obviously have Australia that's in the top 10 ranking, and Samoa, American Samoa, with the lowest ranking, defeating USA. It's a really, really big achievement for a Pacific Island nation. And yeah, I think they're paving the way for the other Pacific countries such as Fiji, Tonga, Papua New Guinea, as well as New Zealand, that are, you know, starting to integrate this program with the youth program. Here in Papua New Guinea, I haven't been following up recently, but I did manage to watch a couple of flag football matches here in PNG, so I have a bit of knowledge on the code itself. Yeah, but it's really good that this code is included in the LA Olympics 2028. So, yeah, kudos to American Samoa, and hopefully they qualify for the LA Olympics.
Harriet, before we move on from flag football, obviously there's Oztag as well here in Australia, and there's other versions of flag football that help young players get into sport of say, rugby league or rugby union or American football without the contact element, so it becomes more inclusive. Yeah. How do you see this as a sport that can help enhance, you know, your skill set, and just around the fact that not everyone probably wants to play a contact sport, but they still want to move and feel free and learn a different game? Like, how do you see like non-contact sports like flag football growing in the Pacific?
Oh, interesting that you asked me that question, Sam, because it's actually, I won't be surprised that in the next year or two, the Cook Islands actually integrates flag football into its sporting system here. It also won't surprise me, you know, it will sort of dominate our, let's say, over our contact sports at the moment. Right now, what we're seeing here at home is a surge and rise actually in Ripper Tag, which is what we play or how we introduce rugby into the schools. And we've found that a lot of the kids, especially around the under 14 age group, are starting to enjoy that game a lot more than going straight into contact. So it won't surprise me, Sam, that flag football will be introduced very, very soon, and it'll probably dominate some of the contact sports at the moment.
I think you're spot on with that. Honestly, when I think of the rise of Oztag here in Australia and the other versions of, you know, tag, like you've mentioned Ripper Tag, like it is so popular amongst everyone. And what I love about it as well, it's so inclusive of the fact that, say, mums, dads, uncles and aunties can play in the same team as their sons, daughters, nephews and nieces who are like, you know, could be 13, 14 or 15. So that in itself is a really good opportunity around, I think, around connection and moving your body and getting people involved in the sport around healthy living and being able to have enjoyment and fun in their lives through sport. So I think it's definitely on the rise. And if it becomes more of a professional sport and becomes in competitions like the Olympics, you know, we might see it in the Pacific Games or in the Pacific Mini Games or in the Micronesia Games moving forward, because you don't need a lot of space. You don't need a lot of resources, but I think it could be on the up across the Pacific. But anyway, ladies, thank you for that. That's it for now for the big bowl until we refill it again next week and keep you informed here on Fresh Off the Field.
Fresh Off the Field. The sporting pulse of the Pacific. ABC Radio Australia.
We're going to get over to Jamie, who had a chat with PNG Touch football player and local comp coach Eugene Ecker following his local club, who dominated the elite touch competition in Port Moresby over the weekend. And before we get to that chat, Jamie, are you still playing touch footy?
Yeah, I just played over the weekend, the finals.
Oh, so this is your story.
Oh, hold on.
Was this you that was in this story? Are you featuring as the star player in the story? Oh, and there's the medal. The champion. Did you actually get on the field or were you on the bench?
No, I'm actually a star winger.
You start as the winger.
I play as wing, unfortunately.
Oh.
We lost, but we finished as minor premiers because our team topped the, dominant throughout the season, except the grand final, unfortunately.
And what's, in your eyes, what's special about Eugene?
Yeah, so Eugene, just a bit of background on him. He is one of our veteran touch football players here in Papua New Guinea. Obviously, a very decorated touch football player. He's part of the 2015 squad, open men squad that he captained, and he won. They won bronze medal at the World Cup at Coffs Harbour in Australia. And prior after that World Cup performance, they went on to compete in the 2015 Pacific Games, claiming their first gold. And then in Samoa again in 2019. Unfortunately, they settled for silver in the Solomon Islands Games, but he is one of the decorated touch football players we have here in Papua New Guinea. So with his experience, he recently transitioned from being a player to coach, especially the juniors and development teams that they have in the OTS Tribes Football Club, which is one of the big teams in the Corporate Touch Port Moresby competition. So, yeah, after their dominant performance over the weekend during the finals, I had the opportunity to ask him about the team's performance and all five of their teams dominating to win the title over the weekend. So, yeah, I started asking him about the team's performance.
Kept it off with all five teams making the grand final. This year, we're just thinking about the processes, the systems put in place. It was new to a few of the athletes, players that were coming through and were there helping each other out to teach them consistently the processes and systems. And it showed in the grand final, or all five teams making the grand final, because we stick to the systems and the processes of the basic fundamentals of the game. So, yeah, I'm pretty much happy with the overall performance by the team, especially the under-16 team.
Your junior under-16s were the only team to go into two dropout challenge in the finals against Kutmo. What was the main message for them before the challenge?
Message for the under-16 team on grand final day and all throughout the season is just don't worry about who you're playing. Just stick to the basic fundamentals of the game, the processes, the defensive systems and structures that I put in place for the team. We put in place for the team, the coaches, and they stick to those processes, simple processes, and it helped them to reach the grand final. They were leading in the grand final, the under-16 grand final. Unfortunately, Kutmo caught up and they drew level, went all the way to the wire, and for them to come out winners shows the system is working, and we need to still drill it into the under-16 players. So yeah, it was just same repetition of telling them to stick to the basic, stick to the processes that has helped them a lot.
Your open men's development team consisted of juniors transitioning into the open division. Was this the first title win?
First grand final in Pool B. They made grand finals a few years back, but they lost in the grand final. Most of the development boys are boys who played in our under-16 junior boys, junior team before transitioning into the development team, because most of them had reached the ages of 17, 18. So we decided to put a development men's team or a team to have that pathway set up, so the players go from juniors into the development team, into the men's and women's elite team. So yeah, most of them are our junior boys who we taught them the systems, the process, the club culture, to be disciplined on and off the field, and to stick to the processes as always, and trust in the processes, and just play hard.
It's always a challenge when it comes to the Open Division finals. Now, this year you competed against FH Parapela in the Open Mix, Open Women's, as well as the Open Men's Division, and claimed all three titles. What can you say about the commitment displayed by your team to do a clean sweep in all the club's divisions?
FH Parapela is our rivals. We've been at it for a long time now. Parapela, FH Parapela and OTS Tribes. And for us to make it into the grand final for the three divisions, Open Mix, Open Women's and Open Men's, both teams showed commitment, showed passion, and showed good sportsmanship to make it to the finals. And for us to clean sweep in the finals, it shows that our systems are working in the tribes pathway, the tribe system. So we're sticking to it, making few changes wherever we can, and it has shown in the grand final wins that the clean sweep is a major achievement for the club, the executives, the sponsors, but most for all for the players as a whole. The commitment shown by especially the women's team is a lot, because we have a lot of young girls that are playing now in the women's team. Most of our ladies, some have left, some have away, so we have a lot of young girls in the team, and to go back-to-back showed a lot of commitment, especially from the leaders, especially Maria Alu, Grace Koba, and the two young ladies that have been supporting them, Ida Alu and Julie Francis. So the commitment showed by the ladies is very, very, very happy to see that commitment shown. And for the men's team, we had a good season, no lose. We knew Parapela were gonna come out fighting, so we stick to the processes and just stayed in, played the long game and just managed our game, and we came up the victors.
Following the CTPM finals, those selected from your club will start training potentially next week ahead of the 2026 National Touch Championship. How excited are you to see these talents prepare for the championship?
For tribe players making it into the CTPM squad for the National Touch Championships, we have 26 players that have been selected during the season and in the trials and have now made the final list for CTPM. So it's also a big achievement this year to have players selected in all the teams that have been selected by CTPM, that have been put out by CTPM. So we have a total of 26. I think this is the biggest ever number we've contributed to CTPM. So yeah, it's a big achievement for the team to have 26 players playing for CTPM in the coming nationals.
Despite the 2027 Pacific Games in Tahiti not including touch football, there's a couple of big regional tournaments leading up to the 2028 Touch World Cup in New Zealand. As a touch footy veteran, what would be your message to the young athletes in your club who aspire to reach bigger heights, potentially rep PNG in the future?
My message is just to have a good attitude, to be disciplined, listen to your parents, always respect yourself, respect the people around you, just put God first in everything and anything you do, and yeah, just take one day at a time, one game at a time, one training session at a time. You have mobile phones, internet available to go search touch footy and see something new, work on something new. Don't stay in one shell. Just break the shell open and just adapt to new changes, new rules, new game style, and just be yourself mainly. But most importantly, it's to have good attitude. Once you have good attitude and approach towards training, everything else falls in place.
Thank you, Tomas, Jamie, for that chat with Eugene Ecker from PNG Touch Football. Unreal chat. He seems very wise, and look forward to seeing him mould many more players in the future. Harriet, we'll get to you a little bit later on the show with your interview. But for now, let's hop aboard the Fresh Off the Field Va'a and do this.
Island Hopping.
Yep, it's time to go island hopping. And the way we do that, we grab a paddle, we jump in the va'a and go island hopping, and make sure that Jamie and Harriet do all the work while I just kick back and just ask for waters here and there and just make sure we're going in the right direction. So that's me. I'm the skipper of this ship, I believe, self-proclaimed, but doesn't matter. Anyway, let's go, Jamie. First up, we're going to go the 2026 OFC Men's Champions League semi-final. We're already at the Champions League semi-final for OFC. Which OFC competition is this one? Because I felt like we just finished the OFC.
Yes,
or just started, one of the two.
We're just taking the pedal and going all the way to Fiji.
Oh, Fiji.
Vinaka.
Yes, Lola Vina. Set, Wananavu.
Hey, so yesterday evening, the OFC Men's Champions League semifinals were underway at the bars for our Govind Park Stadium. And the Central Coast FC from Solomon Island secured the grand final spot for this Champions League finals as things slowly wrap up in Bar Fiji. Now, this follows a tense match against Vanuatu's Galaxy FC in the semifinals yesterday evening. Solomon Island's international Rafa Leai was the star of the show, scoring a hat-trick to secure the narrow 3-2 victory over Galaxy, 3-2 win over Galaxy FC. It was a perfect start for the Solomon Islands club, who led comfortably with a 2-0 lead through Leai in the first half, denying Galaxy a goal. However, the Vanuatu club came back fighting in the second half with the competition leading goal scorer, William Dos Santos Mendina. That's a Brazilian name.
Very impressive. Yeah. And if you're just tuning in now, there are sirens in the background. Just checking, Jamie, you're okay there. They're not coming to get you, are they? Sweet, okay. I just want to make sure they're not coming to get you, and we have to fill the rest of the show because you've been naughty. But anyway, continue on.
Yeah, back to our OFC Men's Champions League. The second half was really intense with the Galaxy FC leading goal scorer, William Dos Santos Mendina, scoring the opening goal, and then the Brazilian equalizing a few minutes later, which is really impressive. So this forced both teams to go into extra time after the regular time, which saw Leai score the winning goal. So it was a really intense match for both sides, for Vanuatu and the Solomon Islands-based clubs. But Central Coast have earned their spot in the finals. Now, prior to this match, Auckland City, who are the defending champions in the OFC Men's Champions League, is their way into the fifth successive OFC Champions final as the defending champions after a strong match against the Fiji's Rewa FC with a 3-1 win in the semifinals. Now, with key players Meryl Nand and Joseph Atale suspended, Rewa FC head coach Tevita Waranaivalu was forced to shuffle his pack, bringing in a couple of players, but it was still not enough to contain the defending champions to secure the grand final spot. So after that intense semifinals yesterday for both matches, Auckland City now prepared to defend their title against Central Coast in the finals this weekend. And I just have to say that regardless of the final result this weekend, this competition serves as a very important comp for our Oceania Pro footballers to return to their camps, because OFC has just confirmed that eight teams are the same eight teams that featured in the inaugural season are returning for the 2027 Pro League season. So, yeah, good competition lead up for most of our pro footballers.
Yeah, love it. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty more OFC chats throughout the year. There's plenty happening in that space. I think that's what I love about the world game of football. There's always something on, and plenty of pathways for all age groups in both men's and women's games. So unreal stuff there, Jamie. Harriet, let's get over to you now. We're going to paddle towards... Or are we staying in Fiji?
We're staying in Fiji.
Okay, hey. Sweet. We're not paddling here. We're going to stay in Fiji. What have you got for us?
Yep. So we're staying in Fiji for very, very big, big news, especially in the world of rugby league, where there's another big development happening there, with Fiji officially joining the Pacific Rugby League Partnership. What this means is that Fiji Prime Minister Sitiveni Rambuka and Sports Minister Jesse Saukuru signed the statement of intent in Parliament this week, bringing Fiji into a partnership alongside Papua New Guinea, Samoa and Tonga. And this is a pretty significant investment. The partnership is backed by $250 million Australian dollars. That's right, $250 million Australian dollars with the aim of growing rugby league.
I can get
right
that out of my ashtray in my car, $250 million. Holy, how good's that? Is that just for rugby league?
This is for rugby league.
Come on, Sitiveni, can you get it over to rugby and use those funds? And no, I can't be endorsing any criminal activity, but I would like to see those funds be used for our rugby union players. But anyway, that's a different story. Sorry, continue
that
on, Harriet.
That would be lovely. I know, Sam, for me personally, this strikes a chord, but we will, you know, just champion on sports in the Pacific. But yes, so with the funding, this is not just about developing elite players. The focus here is on building the game from the grassroots up, seeing stronger clubs and federations, school and community competitions, also talent pathways in academies, and most importantly, providing more opportunities for women and girls. Australian Rugby League Commission, Commissioner Peter Betty says one of the key priorities for Fiji will be getting more young people involved, especially through schools and communities. And I think that's probably the biggest story here. It's about creating a pathway where kids can get into rugby league, develop their skills, and potentially progress all the way through to the international level. For Fiji, it's another big step in growing its rugby league footprint. And for the wider Pacific, of course, it's about building a stronger and more sustainable future for the sport.
Yep, you can grow your rugby league footprint in Fiji, but hopefully it doesn't grow too big. Fiji is one of those primary areas for rugby, the Drua, the Flying Fijians, the Fijiana, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I do support all things pathways when it comes to opportunities to become better people, and sport allows us to do that. So it's awesome to see that there's more funding towards grassroots, and hopefully that leads to facilities and coaching and all the things required for players if they want to make it at the next level. So I really appreciate that story. We're going to stay on a bit of rugby league, I believe. And Jamie, there is a legend. There is one of the best players to have ever played the game has decided to hang up his boots in the NRL.
Yes, Cameron Riders number 300.
Cameron Riders number 3. Yep, he would have been very old at this stage of his life. It'd be impressive to still be going if he was rated number 3.
Yeah, so it's obviously number 300. Josh Papali'i has confirmed that he will be hanging up his boots after this year as his NRL career comes to an end. It is a really sad news for the Cameron Riders, but the 34-year-old has, you know, had a decorated NRL career, becoming the Raiders' most capped player with 340 games played. Papali'i, who is of Samoa and Cook Islands heritage, Harriet Eilison, has also played rep footy in his career, representing Australia in 11 appearances. The only 2 appearances in the Australian Prime Minister's 13th match against PNG, 11 appearances for Samoa, and 24 appearances for Queensland in the state of origin. Now, he's been part of the Green Machine since his career began in 2011, and it's been 15 years too long for the veteran. So to honour his farewell, Raiders CEO Don Fenner confirmed that they will rename Geo Stadium to Papa's House for tomorrow evening's clash against the Broncos. So, yeah, on Monday they unveiled a mural depicting Papali'i's 2019 preliminary final that catapulted the club into its first grand final appearance in 25 years. And that was the final against Sydney Roosters. I remember that clearly, obviously, because that's my team. But yeah, what a career he's had. And yeah, while we see him retire at the end of this NRL season, hopefully we get to see him make a final appearance in this year's Rugby World Cup to finish off on a high note.
Yeah, he's a special, I would say just that special talent, both on and off the field, a leader. You know, and the thing about Papa as well, like, he's had challenges within his career where he's had to rebuild find himself again to be able to get up and be better, you know, and he's accountable for all of his actions. I love the fact that he owns the fact that he wasn't the best trainer, but he just loved playing footy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but that's him to a T. There's always exceptions to the rules when it comes to, you know, sometimes you don't need to be the best trainer, but I'd highly recommend you are. But for guys like Papa, he's just he's an all-round character of the game. And to be able to see him either play for Samoa or potentially the Cook Islands.
I too.
Yes, or the Cook Islands. I think it's his mother that's Cook Islander. I think that would be a pretty special way to go out because I know when he was on Indonesian footy, when we interviewed him about that, you know, I think his mum's always been into him about, hey, when are you going to represent our side as well? I think that'd be a special gift to his mum and to say thank you for everything because it's always special when you've got special people behind you helping you along the way. But I love that story. All the best to Big Papa this weekend. Please pack out Canberra Stadium and get behind the Raiders. But let's go to you now, Harriet. We are paddling to your beautiful Cook Islands.
Yes, and somewhat we are also making our way to Tonga for this next story,
where
the race for next year's Netball World Cup is really starting to heat up across the Pacific. And there's some really exciting news for Cook Islands Netball, with two Rarotonga-based players named in the national squad for next month's Oceania qualifier in Nuku'alofa. We have Nicole Te Aore, who is from the Awatū Netball Club, and also Nicole Marurai from Tupapa Marairenga Netball Club, who will both pull on the Cook Islands colours as the team takes on some of the best sides in the region. So this qualifier will run from the 14th to the 18th of September in Tonga, and there's a lot on the line. Two teams from the tournament will earn an invitation to the 2027 Netball World Cup in Sydney. New Zealand has already secured its place, while Fiji has also named its squad. So the competition in Tonga is going to be really interesting. As for the Cook Islands, this is just really a fantastic opportunity once again to test our players against the region's best, gain that international experience, and hopefully push our way onto that world stage. So it'll be definitely one to watch closely, especially with the two Nicoles representing our local clubs here and flying the flag for the Cookies.
Love it. Love it. Plenty happening in the world of sport. And that wraps us up for Island Hopping. Thank you so much for bringing all those stories in, ladies, until we check in again next week with Island Hopping.
ABC Radio Australia. Fresh off the field. Feel the power of Pacific sports.
All right, Harriet, it's time to get over to you and the chat you had with Chef de Mission for Cook Islands, Michelle Paiti. But obviously, she has a massive task ahead of her and she's the right person for the job. What do you think her vision is? Like, where does she want to get it to? If she had the one thing that she wanted to change and implement and grow, what do you think that would be?
For her, it's definitely to open the minds of our young athletes to be able to dream big, and that opportunities like these, especially coming from a small island nation, is very much possible. She also wants to bring a positive experience to the young athletes who travel under her wing as well.
I love it. The kids dream it and she will create it. Perfect. What did you start off by asking her?
So I started asking Michelle about what thoughts ran through her mind as she received the news that she was appointed Chef de Mission.
Gratitude and appreciation, and what a blessing to be given such an amazing opportunity, as well as excitement to be attending an Olympic Games. But to be honest, my head probably just filled up with so many questions about the role and how I'm going to deliver on it.
Okay, so you'll be leading a delegation of young Cook Islands athletes on one of the biggest sporting stages in the world. What does that responsibility mean to you personally?
It definitely is a huge responsibility, but also an honour to be entrusted to lead and guide our young athletes who are our rising stars for our nation, for the Cook Islands. And to ensure that their experience is a positive one.
And beyond the competition and results, what do you hope our young athletes take away from their Youth Olympic experience in Senegal?
The Youth Olympics will definitely be an eye-opener for our young athletes. So creating those new friendships, but also hopefully motivating them and being inspired to further develop themselves in their careers and create further opportunities for themselves from this opportunity.
Now, Michelle, you bring a strong background in youth development and especially safeguarding. How will you use that experience to make sure our athletes feel supported, safe and confident throughout the games?
Definitely our preparation will be key, just in creating a team bond and a positive family environment, that everybody's feels safe and supported in. We've already created a calendar of scheduled sessions that we'll work together covering different topics and create some understanding and awareness for our athletes, just to help them outside of their actual events, because it will be overwhelming for them, just the sheer numbers of athletes that are going to be there and the attention that's going to be on them and on the event itself. So preparing them so that it's a positive experience for them is going to be key.
And finally, my last question for you is, Dakar 2026 is a historic Youth Olympics as the first Olympic event on African soil. What would you love to see this experience inspire in the next generation of young athletes back home in the Cook Islands?
Yeah, really love for them to see that nothing is impossible and that there are huge opportunities out there in sport, even for our little nation, and for them to know that we can compete at the top level and at the world stage if we really do commit ourselves, dedicate ourselves and work hard towards it. And hopefully it really does just inspire our next generation to dream big.
Yes, you're listening to Fresh Off the Field with me, Sam Wikes, and a big thank you to Harriet for that chat with Chef de Mission for the Cook Islands, Michelle Patti. Mate, amazing work there, and I've got no doubt she is going to do big and wonderful things for the Cook Islands in that space. So I appreciate that, but that's us for probably all the formal stuff for Fresh Off the Field. Now it's time for us to have a little bit of fun.
Fresh Off the Dome.
Yes, let's play Fresh Off the Dome. Every week I ask three questions and our contestants, our hosts, will use their name as the buzzer to answer the correct question here and get it right. But we have been on fire lately. Honestly, I don't know if you've been tuning in. Well, you should be tuning in every Thursday. Oh, man, the ladies have been coming with the goods and it's been competitive and pure luck half the time when they get some of the answers. I was like, there's no way you knew that. But you got to be in it to win it, and that's all you have to do is just get one right. Let's go to question number one for Fresh Off the Dome. And these are really good questions. I'm going to thank our producer, Tiana, here for these ones. It's very relatable to our Pacific Islands. So question number one, how many traditional methods are permitted in coconut tree climbing competitions in Tahiti? Is it A? You'll get a multiple choice here. Is it A, 1? Is it B, 2? Or is it C, 3? We're looking for traditional methods. How many are permitted in coconut tree climbing competitions in Tahiti?
Jamie,
go
Harriet.
For it. Well, Harriet, that was a bit delayed. Must be the internet buffering, but we've got to go with Jamie here.
I'll blame the internet.
Yeah, blame the internet.
I'm just going to take a wild guess, but I did hear Harriet mention it in our last meet. C, 3.
Harriet, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm going to go with 3 as well.
Why would you go 3? And when if she had got it right, I would have said, yes, that is correct. And I've moved over to you thinking that you'll choose a different answer to get it right. So, no. It's not it.
Okay.
It's not right.
I've got a different answer then.
No, it's gone. Give me the
boom, 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 boom.
You know, when I said our other hosting contestants from the weeks before you guys jumped on have been on fire, you're off to a, you're off to a flying start. No, it's two. There's two. Ooh. There are two traditional techniques. Barefoot is one of them. Barefoot climbing is one of them. Using your feet
and
on
rope.
Either side of the trunk while your hands hook around the trunk or for support. And yes, it's the fiber loop, you know, made from the hibiscus. It's wrapped around the feet in a figure eight shape to help secure grip and prevent slipping. There you go. So it's two.
Wow.
There, we learned something
new. What a great question, Tiana.
That is a great question. Too bad. Too bad it wasn't followed up with great answers. But anyway, let's go to question number two. Here we go. This is another multiple choice one around Tahiti's coconut tree. How tall are the coconut trees typically used in Tahiti's coconut tree climbing competitions? Is it A, 5 to 6 meters? B, 8 to 9 meters? C, 10 to 15 meters? Something.
Ooh. Jamie.
Jamie, go for it.
Yeah, another wild guess here. I'm going to go with C.
Harriet, I'm going to go to you, okay? And because I haven't given Jamie the celebratory noise, whatever it is, in the paneling over there where they press the button and it goes, yeah, you got it right.
Yeah.
It means it's not C.
I'm going to go with B on this one.
Hit that button. We need a bigger celebrative button, whatever it's called. My English is terrible at the moment. But anyway, it is B, 8 to 9 meters. And I'm just going to read this out. While coconut palms can grow up to around 30 meters tall, competition climbers typically use shorter palms of around 8 to 9 meters, roughly the height of a 2 to 3 story building. And again, when I think about the Cook Islands, is it true the buildings can't go higher than any coconut tree?
That is very true, Sam. Very true.
Fun facts around the Cook Islands. Thank you, Tinerau Arona. Anyway, there we go. It is 1-0. 1-0 to the Cook Islands over PNG. We go to question number three. This even better, this question. Which country holds the record for the fastest barefoot climb up a 9 meter? Keyword,
Harriet.
9 meter coconut tree. Harriet, you don't want to listen to the multiple choice questions, but go for it. You've already buzzed in.
Puke Airani. Cook Islands.
See, if you had it, yeah.
You've got a fact check.
Well, we have fact checked it. I've got a really good blurb here. Is that blurb? Is that the word that we're using? Anyway, state those facts on who has it. But Jamie, is it A, Fiji, B, Samoa, or C, Tonga?
Surely not. Surely not.
Tonga.
What did you say?
What dimension?
C.
What's with you in choosing C for all of these questions? No, it was not C. It's A, Fiji. In 1980, 46-year-old Fijian Fuatai Sola climbed a 9-meter coconut tree barefoot in just 4.88 seconds at the annual coconut tree climbing competition at Sukuna Park in Fiji. In 2026, though, Cook Island champion Yaliloa. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Competing at the Tahiti Traditional Sports Festival, matched Sola's 4.88 second time, but did so on an 8 meter tree.
Oh, okay.
So there's there's difference. 1 meter, 1 meter difference is big. Is big,
yeah.
And would have changed the time up for
sure. We'll give Fiji their flowers.
So Fiji has that. And look, Harriet, you won with an unimpressive 1-0 win for Fresh Off the Dome.
I'll take it.
You'd rather, honestly, you win ugly than lose pretty. That's for sure. That is no truer saying.
Lesson today.
Oh, great lessons. If you're not winning, you're learning. And that's our time up for today's show for this week. We've had a lot of fun. A big thank you to our co-hosts, Jamie Huddle and Harriet Tuara. Thank you, ladies. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Thomas. Sam, appreciate coming on board. And yeah, hopefully I come prepared for the next Fresh Off the Dome.
We hope so too. Harriet, thank you as well.
Hey, malo apito, malo, Sam, and ofalahiatu.
Oh, I love it. Ofalahiatu to everyone out there, to all of our listeners. Thank you for listening to Fresh Off the Field, the Sporting Pulse of the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'll be back next week with two new co-hosts talking all things sport in our region. And this episode was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people.
This program has been funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.